प्रियव्रतोत्थनापादौ
शतरूपपथे
स्थौ वासुदेवस्य कलया रक्षायां जगतां स्थितौ प्रियव्रतोत्थनापादौ शतरूपापथे स्थौ वासुदेवस्य कलया रक्षायां जगता स्थितौ Swayambhuva Manu had two sons by his wife Shatarupa, and the names of the sons were Uttanapada and Priyabrata. Because both of them were descendants of the plenary expansion of Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they were very competent to rule the universe, to maintain and protect the citizens. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It is said that these two kings, Uttanapada and Priyavrata, were specifically empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unlike the great king Rishabh, who was the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Hare Krishna. It is my great fortune to be with all of you once again at Sri Bhaktivedanta Manor, one of Prabhupada's most favorite homes, one of the places he considered most important in his mission to preach the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. Today we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 8th chapter, which is entitled Dhruva Maharaj Leaves Home for the Forest. In the beginning verses of this chapter, it is explaining how Lord Brahma creates this universe and the descendants that are born from him. We know how Brahma, at the very beginning of creation, was sitting atop the lotus flower that had sprouted from the navel of Sri Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. There, although the first living being within the creation was utterly bewildered, who he was, where he was, is so great that he's the father of every living entity, of all species within this entire universe, from the time of its creation to the time of its destruction. He's big family man. Not only that, but he lives in the Brahma Loka, powerful personality. His lifespan is 311 trillion years. What is our significance compared to Lord Brahma? But yet, he considered himself utterly insignificant when he saw around him material nature. Not only that, he was bewildered, confused. He understood his only shelter was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus he took shelter. And through that, the Vedas were revealed to him, in essence. The purpose of this creation was revealed at the very beginning. In the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in another verse, Lord Brahma is praying to Lord Vishnu. The situation of this prayer is similar to what we have explained. What we're reading about is just after the birth of Brahma. But every morning he has to go through the same type of situation. Because at the time of Brahma's night, when he goes to sleep, which is several billions of years is his day, a major portion, the lower planets and the middle planets, are destroyed. And only the very, very upper planets, Brahmaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Maharloka, they're somewhat sustained. But the waves of the Garbhodak ocean, the ocean of devastation, practically devastate the entire universe. And Brahma wakes up and sees everything's in shambles. And then he has to create again. But he doesn't have the power. He doesn't actually remember exactly how he's supposed to do it. So every morning, he has to helplessly take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, begging him, please help me. I'm supposed to do this service for you, but I don't know how. It's impossible. Unless you empower me, I'm helpless. And in his prayers, he explains what a thankless task it is for him to create a universe. All these various species of life are coming through him. Actually, at the very beginning of the cosmic manifestation, Lord Karunadakshayi Vishnu, he creates the Mahatattva, the potential material energy, or Prakriti, and then he glances within it. By his glance, all the jivatmas, or living entities, who are meant to take birth in material creation, are impregnated within the womb of Mother Nature. Krishna says in Gita, Aham Bija Pratapita, that he is the seed-giving father of all living beings. And this is explanation specifically how he is directly seed-giving father. By his glance, he impregnates material nature with all the living entities who have the karma to have to enjoy and suffer in material existence. And then Lord Brahma is empowered to give these living entities specific forms or bodies to go through their karmic conditions. So just as Lord Brahma, every morning when he wakes up, feels himself completely helpless and meditates intensely on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, begging for his mercy to perform his service. Similarly, in our insignificant conditions, this should be our mood when we first wake up every morning. Who are we next to Lord Brahma? What is our power to perform our service or remain pure? So as we wake up, Srila Prabhupada taught us, first thing we should do is offer obeisances to the Lord, to Guru and to the Vaishnavas. That we should clean ourselves by taking bath, then come before the Lord and pray Mangal Arti, and then absorb ourselves in the supreme of all prayers, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Fix our mind, begging for service, and begging for the power to please the Lord by our service. Because in essence, the success of our service is simply how we please Krishna. If we get very great results in the eyes of mortal men and women, but we do not please Krishna, sramevihi kevalam, it is a waste of time. 100% of our spiritual advancement is based on how we please Krishna. And Krishna explains what to do to please him. He's so merciful. We have abandoned him to come to this material world. Birth after birth after birth, we are competing with him. Due to an envious condition of heart, we're trying to exploit the resources of his creation. We're trying to take credit and glory for the things that ultimately Krishna is responsible for. And yet, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata, he descends again and again and again out of love, just to call us back home, back to Godhead. He speaks Bhagavad Gita. He sends his own personal associates, the great spiritual masters, to canvass on his behalf out of love. Please, you are in the darkness of ignorance, suffering perpetually, birth after birth after birth. But there's enough enjoyment within this creation, by Maya's powers, to keep us addicted to a situation by which we will suffer. Therefore, Lord Brahma, every morning he prays this way. How a thankless task it is to create material existence. Because he explains, the whole purpose of material existence is to cause people to suffer. Now, Lord Brahma is a great Vaishnava, Paradukaduki. His only unhappiness is to see the unhappiness of others. He's a selfless, compassionate, loving servant of all living beings. And he's creating a situation which is like a prison house, which is going to force everyone to have to suffer. So it's not a pleasant job for him. It's a difficult job. But yet he understands that these living entities have to go through this suffering to ultimately turn to God once again. And once we turn to Krishna, then we are eligible for the ultimate eternal spiritual satisfaction of transcendental reciprocation in love with Krishna. So that is the purpose of material nature, authorized by the Creator himself. Material world is a place to make people so frustrated due to suffering that ultimately they surrender to Krishna and find real happiness. And yet, we're trying to find some other reason to live in this material world. But if we want to understand any manufactured object, the best way to understand it is to hear from the manufacturer. So this is Lord Brahma's verdict. Lord Brahma also explains how the enjoyments of this world are simply created by him and by Krishna for the purpose of entangling people, birth after birth after birth, in suffering. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would explain that this material world is only suffering. And it's hard for us to grasp that, because it's a very high, profound, realized, philosophical realization. Because there's a lot of happiness in this world. There's so many pleasures. When we eat, there's pleasure. When we mate, there's pleasure. When we sleep, there's pleasure. And when we defend, we're trying to protect our pleasures. Otherwise, why do we defend? And human civilization has created so many wonderful, wonderful technologies by which we can enjoy. Endless. However, each one of these are not actually created by man for enjoyment. But man is simply the instrument of the illusory energy, Maya. And by his surrender to Maya, he becomes an instrument of Maya. If one surrenders to Krishna, he becomes an instrument of Krishna. Just like Srila Prabhupada, when he was on Jaladuta, he was praying that I'm just an insignificant beggar. I don't have the words by which I can change the hearts of these people of the Western world. If you give me the words, then I can impress their heart. I am simply your instrument, your puppet. Make me dance, O Lord, make me dance as you want me to dance. Because he was totally surrendered to Krishna, Krishna manifested himself through him to attract the living entities back to the process of devotional service. His divine grace is Krishna's divine grace, flowing incessantly like the river Ganges through his pure devotees like Srila Prabhupada. But Prabhupada never took credit, because he understood it is all the work of Krishna. Sometimes he would have his disciples reading Krishna book to him, and he would say, I did not write this book, Krishna wrote it. He was dictating, I was only taking dictation. And then his disciples took his dictation. That is parampara. So just as we become an instrument of Krishna when we surrender to Krishna, when you surrender to material energy, Maya, you become her instrument. And then she works through you. She could manifest so many incredible things, and you think you're the doer. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani saravasha ahankara vimudatma karatahamiti manyate. So all of these objects of material enjoyment within this world and all the various processes created to enjoy are all actually being created by Maya, the illusory energy, through her surrendered agents. But from the very beginning, it is told to us that they are all meant to cause us to suffer. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj, this great Mahabhagavat Mahajan, he told us very simply, he was only 5 years old, although he was speaking profound esoteric philosophy, he also summed it up very simply. He said, if you want to be happy in this world, you simply have to do one thing. Stop trying to find happiness in this world. As long as you're trying to find happiness in this world, you have to suffer. Anandamayo vyashat. But we're pleasure-seeking living entities. The soul needs pleasure. Because by constitution, we are satchit ananda. We are part and parcel of Krishna. We are eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. So to experience bliss, ecstasy, is our inherent nature. We actually can't live without it. Just like a fish cannot live without water, the living entity cannot be satisfied without transcendental ecstasy. So we have to have pleasure. But the pleasures of this material world are perverted reflections of the real pleasure that the soul is seeking. Yehi samsparashacha bhoga dukha jonaya evate atyanta vanta konti anateshu ramate. Sri Bhagavad Gita tells us that the intelligent person does not take part in the objects of the senses with their objects, because they are the sources of misery. This is actually Krishna's explanation of what is intelligence. Not getting PhD, master's degrees, not becoming a big, big ruler of many lands. This is not real intelligence. Real intelligence is to understand that all the pleasures of material world are sources of misery, and therefore to not take part in them. Prabhupada told us about his visit to Moscow, where he met with one of the great, great scholars of Indology and philosophy, Professor Kotowski. He had several PhDs. Amongst the academic class, he was world famous. He told Srila Prabhupada with great conviction, Swamiji, when we die, everything is finished. Srila Prabhupada told us in India, there's simple, illiterate people who don't even know how to write their name. They're just working in the fields on their hands and knees, picking rice. But they know that they should behave very nicely in this life, because if they do not, they will suffer in their next life, and if they do, they will be elevated in their next life. So they understand that they are the soul, not the body. And the soul is eternal. So who is more intelligent, Prabhupada explained? The simple persons in the rice paddies of India, or these great, great PhDs of the Western world? They understand the truth. So this is real intelligence. Lord Brahma performed the work of creation. And here, in this chapter, we find that at the beginning, all kinds of materialistic, ignorant, demoniac beings were being born of Lord Brahma. And it describes the line of parental beings that were being born. People like Kali and his consort, harsh speech. Hare Krishna. This is one of the symptoms of Kali, harsh speech. And born of them are envy and greed and duplicity and hypocrisy. All these anartas have a personified form that were born of Lord Brahma. And yet Lord Brahma is such a compassionate, gentle-hearted person. But he's having all these demoniac children born of him. Very difficult. And then it describes he had other sons, Narada Muni, Sanat Kumar, and the four Kumaras. And they all became brahmacharis to dedicate their lives to the transcendental loving service of the Lord. And here we find that he gives birth to Swayambhuva Manu, who really, in the spirit of Brahma, wanted to assist him. Narada Muni, the four Kumaras, they were assisting him by promoting the highest realizations of transcendental knowledge through renunciation of all material life. But Swayambhuva Manu, he was meant to be a great king and populate the world. So what is the difference between the bad sons of Brahma and the good sons of Brahma? The bad sons have the same material relationship, but they have taken the spirit of Brahma's mission as their life. They have rejected it, the bad sons. They have their own independent will. And the good sons are surrendered to the will of their father. Prabhupada explains, Advaitacharya, he had six children. Three of them were rascals. They became like Mayavadis. Therefore, we never talk about them. And three of them, headed by Achyutananda and Gopal, they were very, very great devotees because they took the spirit of their father as their life and soul. So they're really his sons. Similarly for Srila Prabhupada, when we take initiation, when we take shelter in one sense, we become his spiritual children. But just because we're his children doesn't mean necessarily that we're good. We're good to the degree we follow the principles he has given us and we surrender to his mission. To that degree, we're good. Otherwise, we can be demoniac. If we reject the words of the Father, live independent of the will of the Father. So Swayambhuva Manu, he was such a great king. This is also described in Srimad Bhagavatam. How this personality, who is one of the Mahajans, according to Srimad Bhagavat, one of the greatest authorities of transcendental knowledge, he had a big, big palace, because kings had to have such palaces. In order to do their work, they had to have certain degrees of opulence. And when he would take rest at night, there would be Brahmins and pure-hearted souls singing Vedic mantras and telling wonderful stories about Krishna's Leela and his various incarnations. And he would sleep just dreaming about Krishna all night. And then when it was time to wake up, these pure-hearted souls would gather around him and sing the names and glories of the Lord, and he would wake up. Then he would chant the names of the Lord. He would worship the Lord in his beautiful temple. Personally, humbly, he would serve the Brahmins with his own hands, the devotees. He was really, genuinely, a humble servant of all living beings. And when it came time to marry his most beautiful daughter, Devahuti, his only consideration for her was that she go back to Godhead. Today in the world, when people think of marrying their daughters, their concern is, how much money is that person going to earn? And what kind of house is that person living in? And is the family affluent? And what is the beauty of that person? What is the color of that person's skin? These are all very important considerations for marriage. What caste, what community, what educational background, how much money, the appearance of the person's body. But Swayambhuva Manu, multi-millionaire, king of the world, living in a beautiful palace, raised his daughter in such a way that she was so spiritually inclined, but yet she never experienced any inconveniences of material nature because her father protected her. But when it was time for marriage, he married her to Kardama Muni, who was living in the deep recesses of the jungle with wild animals, didn't even have a house, but he was a great devotee. So he was honored that by the will of Lord Vishnu, he was allowed to marry his daughter to a great devotee. And his daughter, she was willing to let her hair be matted, live in the jungle, become emaciated and pale in complexion, and never complained, because she understood, if I just assist this great devotee, Krishna will be pleased. And ultimately, from that marriage, a son was born, Lord Kapiladev. So Swayambhuva Manu was a man of great spiritual stature. And here in this verse it is describing his two sons, Uttanapada and Priyavrata, both very, very great devotees. Priyavrata became a disciple of Narada Muni. And seeing Narada Muni's example of renunciation and devotion, he wanted to follow in his footsteps. So although Priyavrata was the eldest son and who was meant to take over the entire kingdom, can you imagine? You're born into a situation where you are the person to inherit the kingdom of the entire world. Such power, such prestige, such opulence. And in those days, the kings were so great, Swayambhuva Manu's kingdom, there was practically no disturbances. There was no antagonistic parties trying to tear you down. Being king was a wonderful experience. But Priyavrata, he rejected his inherent right to be king because he wanted to perform tapasya and just do devotional service in the renounced order. So he went to the top of a mountain where there was no home, no anything, and he just there worshipped Krishna. Uttanapada was made king because he was willing to do this service. We find in more modern civilization, actually through history, the type of treachery, competition and envy between the sons of a king. In India there was Aurangzeb. He was not the eldest son. He had elder sons who were more qualified than him, who were going to inherit their father's kingdom, Shah Jahan. So what did he do? He murdered all of his brothers and then put his father in prison just so that he could be king. Hare Krishna. So vicious, this lust for money, this lust for power. And yet, some of the main streets in India today are named after him. Even cities are named after him. This is material existence. So, Priyavrata, he went to the forest to perform devotional service in the renounced order, and Uttanapada became king. This narration is being explained by Maitreya Muni to Uddhava, or to Vidura, And in the next verse only, he gets right to the point of Dhruva Maharaj. Srila Prabhupada explains that Maitreya Rishi, he just wants to go right to the nectar. Dhruva Maharaj, the son of Uttanapada, was born of Suniti, who was a neglected wife. Suruchi was a wife that Uttanapada greatly favored. And in certain ways, he came under her control. This is the problem with being a king. Even if you're a great devotee like Uttanapada, still dealing with material nature as you have to deal with it, you become bewildered to some extent. Even later on, when Priyavrat became king, Swayambhuva Manu had to go all the way to the forest mountains to beg him to come and be the king. This is generations later. He didn't want to. He didn't want to be entangled. He just wanted pure devotional service. But then Lord Brahma came down, and Narada Muni said, yes, yes, you should do. But it is described in Srimad Bhagavatam, even he became bewildered due to the attachments all around him. But because he was performing his duty specifically and exclusively for the service of the Lord, and he had nice association, he was easily delivered by that bewilderment. So whoever we are, however great we are, we must have the association of devotees, or we will be bewildered by Maya. Another example of Bhagavatam is another great king, whose name was Bharat. Bharat Maharaj, he renounced his whole material kingdom, the king, unrivaled emperor of the world. He cared nothing for the pleasures, luxuries, and powers of his kingdom, to the extent that it is compared to a man who walks away from his stool after passing it on the ground. Nobody looks back to see. There's no attachment. You're glad it's out. It's gone. That's the way he left everything. His beautiful young wife, his children, all of the glamour of king. Then he went way, way up to Gandaki River, where Vipramukhi Maharaj had just been. Gandaki River, there he was performing such tapasya. He attained level of bhava, where tears were flowing from his eyes, his hairs were standing on end, his limbs were trembling in ecstasy due to his love for Krishna. But he was alone, he had no association. Even such an advanced state of spirituality, he became bewildered. Maya knows how to capture all of us. She knew, she just couldn't send an apsara to Bharat Maharaj, because he was beyond all this sexual desires. He had left it all behind. She couldn't tempt him with wealth or power, because he had it all and left it. His weakness was, he was very soft-hearted, compassionate, and wanted to help all living beings without discrimination. That's a good quality. That's a glorious quality, paradukaduki. But yet, she saw that this is the only way I'm going to get to capture this man. So she sent this little deer, actually a mother deer, being chased by a lion. And trying to escape from the lion, the deer jumped over the river, and the lion roared. And right over the river, the deer had a miscarriage. A little baby deer came into the water, and then the mother went to the other side. She just kept her jump. As she was jumping, the baby fell out, and she went to the other side. And she saw her baby drowning, and that was so painful for her that she died. So Bharat Maharaj is seeing this very sweet, beautiful little infant deer drowning helplessly in the water. The mother is dead. So naturally a devotee wants to protect others. So he went in and took the deer. But then he was thinking, who's going to feed her? Who's going to protect her from the wild animals? I have to do it. But in the process, he became attached to the deer. So much attached. More attached than he had ever been to anything in his life. If he had association of devotees, that wouldn't have happened. He would have gone back to Godhead. If there were some other devotees around, they would have said to Bharat, Bharat Prabhu, you're too attached to this deer. And he would say, no, no, I'm not attached to this deer. So you, obviously you're attached to the deer. And he would have, yes, yes, actually, that's true. Let me take shelter of the holy names. But because no association, Maya can bewilder. Therefore, Prabhupada explained, if anyone thinks that they can become Krishna conscious without the association of devotees, that person is insane. And if we think we're so advanced, we can do it without the association of devotees, that is simply a type of false ego. Are your hairs standing on end? Are your limbs trembling? Are your tears flowing from your eyes as you're reciting the Lord's names and glories? Are you constantly fixed in remembering Krishna? That was Bharat's state. But yet, because he was alone, Maya tricked him. And he had to take another birth as a deer. But ultimately, Krishna protected him. As Jad Bharat, he avoided all Maya. So, similarly, Priyavrat, he fell into a certain illusion. And we find in this story of this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam how Uttanapada also fell in the trap of Maya. But how, because he was a devotee, Krishna ultimately protected him and saved him. Uttanapada became bewildered by his most beautiful wife, Suruchi. And I'll be very brief, because time is about up. One day he was sitting on his throne, and Suruchi's son, Uttam, was on his lap. Then Suniti's son, Dhruva, came to climb on his father's lap too. He was only 5 years old. And Uttanapada loved both of his children equally. He was very happy to see Dhruva. Fatherly affection filling his heart. But Suruchi, she was outraged to think that this inferior boy from an inferior woman is going to sit on the same level as my son. So she screamed out at Dhruva, "You get off. You have no right to sit on your father's lap. To be elevated to his throne is forbidden, because you were born of a woman who is inferior to me. If you want to sit on your father's throne, you have to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead and be born from my womb." Hare Krishna. So Dhruva Maharaj looked at his father for shelter, but his father, due to his attachment to this wife, was not able to say a single word. He felt betrayed. And he was a little kshatriya, so he got very angry. He came running to his mother. His mother already heard the news. She saw her son, lips trembling, weeping incessantly. It was really the most painful experience for all the people assembled in the palace to see. It was pitiful. And Suniti, her face, it was beautiful like a lotus, but it was like a lotus flower that was dried up by the burning, scorching heat of the sun. And she told Dhruva that actually what your stepmother said is true. I am an inferior woman. Your father does not favor me. But she gave you good advice to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because only he can fulfill your desires. Dhruva was determined. Where will I find him? She said, people go to the forest to find the Lord. So Dhruva accepted his mother as his guru, Shiksha Guru. And on her instruction, he went to the forest. Meanwhile, when little 5-year-old Dhruva went to the forest and Uttanapada heard about this, he was devastated. He was searching for Dhruva, but he couldn't find him anywhere. Here is my beloved son. Due to my wretched attachments, I have offended my son to such an extent that he has rejected his home to go and live in the forest. How will he survive? Uttanapada's heart was tormented with pain. But when you take one step toward Krishna, Krishna takes many, many steps toward you. And how does he do that? By the mercy of the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas. Dhruva was in the middle of the wilderness of the forest, alone. He didn't know how to eat. He didn't know how to live in the forest. There's a whole science that you have to learn to live in the forest. But he just had such determination that I will see Krishna. He didn't even concern himself with the obvious impediments and obstacles that were before him. He was determined. So the Lord reciprocates with our desires. Krishna sent Narada Muni to the middle of that forest to meet Dhruva. Narada Muni preached to him, "Dhruva, you're just a small child. Why are you taking these things so seriously? You should be tolerant. You should be forgiving. You should go home and just live normally." Dhruva Maharaj said, "You are asking me to be forgiving and tolerant, but I'm a Kshatriya. I've been offended. Your words do not sit in my heart. They cannot remain there. I have come here to see the Lord. I must see the Lord." And in one lecture, Prabhupada explains the spirit of Dhruva Maharaj. He said to Narada Muni, "If you cannot help me to realize Vishnu, then please go away." So Narada Muni was really impressed. He actually tested Dhruva Maharaj. What was his actual conviction and commitment to the path of bhakti? He offered him to go back and live peacefully with all justifications why, but Dhruva rejected it. Then he explained to Dhruva Maharaj the process of devotional service. He told him, "You go to the forest of Madhuban, which is situated on the bank of the river Jamuna. That is a sanctified place, holy place. It is a place in Braj Bhumi. And there, three times a day, you should take your bath in Jamuna. And you should control your breath, perform certain asanas so that your body is proper. And in that state of controlling your breath and having proper bodily condition, you completely focus your mind on the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in your heart of hearts. That's the purpose of all yoga, to help focus your mind on Krishna. Today there are so many yoga teachers who will teach asanas and pranayam not to focus the mind on Krishna, to help facilitate better material enjoyment. Defeats the whole purpose. Therefore, Prabhupada called them bogi yogis. Mystic powers, mukti, for a bhakta, these are all bogus. Narada Muni taught him, "You just fix your mind on Krishna." Then he began to explain to Dhruva Maharaj the beautiful form of Krishna. And he gave him the Maha Mantra for the Satya Yuga, the 12-syllable Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Told him to constantly chant this mantra, and that form of the Lord, the deity form of the Lord that you create, you should worship him by offering him water from Jamuna, by offering him beautiful, fragrant flowers and herbs and fruits. Worship that Lord 24 hours a day while chanting his holy names. So Dhruva Maharaj, with the blessings of Narada, went to Madhuban. So determined, 5 years old, constantly chanting the holy name, constantly fixed in worshiping the Lord. And to make the process very, very potent, Dhruva Maharaj, he lived in such a spirit of renunciation. For the first month, he ate wild fruits and berries once every 3 days. But that was just preparation. The second month, he only ate dried leaves and grass once every 6 days. The third month, he only drank a few sips of water every 12 days. The fourth month, he only breathed one breath every 12 days. The fifth month, he was standing on one leg, closed all the openings of his body, and would not even breathe. And the whole while, his mind was completely fixed on the beautiful form of the Lord in meditation. And in his heart of hearts, there was constant repetition of the 12-syllable mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. With utter gratitude and obedience to his spiritual master, he followed these instructions. He became so powerful, this little child, that the Lord had appeared so much in his meditation, within his heart, that his body became as heavy as Vishnu's body. And his toe that was on the ground began to push in the entire earth. Just like if an elephant goes on a boat, the whole boat just starts going under the water. And because he wasn't breathing, he had such control that the entire universe, there was no air. Hare Krishna. This is a very graphic example of how what you do actually influences everyone, everywhere. If you're acting sinfully, those sinful activities actually pollute the entire universe and actually affect everyone to some gross or subtle degree according to that person's receptivity. And similarly, if you're sincerely chanting the holy names and following the principles of devotional service, you're purifying the entire universe. Every living being has such serious responsibility because whatever we say, whatever we do, affects the creation. So Dhruva Maharaj, he didn't mean to do it. He was just absorbed in Vishnu. But by his tapasya, he withdrew all the air of the universe. And here are these big, big, powerful demigods who live millions and millions of years. And they were suffocating. They approached Lord Vishnu because they know, even though they're Ishwaras, when things get difficult, they have to go to Parameshwara, Krishna. The scriptures are full of such narrations. When demons like Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Ravana come, the demigods come all running to Krishna. Please save us, you're our only hope. But when everything's all right, then they enjoy very nicely. That is the problem. So they all ran to Vishnu. What's happening? What's happening? We're suffocating. There's no air. And Vayu's in charge of air, but he had nothing to work with. So Krishna said, Vishnu, that this is my little devotee, Dhruva. He's doing like this. I will go to see him and he will make everything all right. So Dhruva is sitting and he's seeing Vishnu in the core of his heart. And then Lord Vishnu disappeared. And he was feeling so frantically in separation, he opened his eyes and Vishnu was standing right in front of him. The same form that was in his heart was standing before him. Dhruva wanted to offer prayers, but he was only 5 years old. How much education does a person have to compose Sanskrit poetry at five? So he felt so insufficient in his desire to serve. But Krishna tells us in Gita, for my devotee I preserve what they have and I carry what they lack. The Lord placed his blessed conch shell on Dhruva's head. And upon doing, he invested within Dhruva all knowledge. Dhruva began to offer beautiful Sanskrit poetry. Prayers that even millions of years later, the greatest sages, greatest Vaishnavas, are reciting those prayers and developing such deep, deep realizations by those prayers. Then Vishnu asked Dhruva, what do you want? You want kingdom like your father, or you wanted kingdom greater than your father or your grandfather? Swayambhuva Manu. He wanted a kingdom greater than even Brahma. He was determined. That's why he went to the forest. But because he was meditating on the Lord under the instruction of his Guru Maharaj, and chanting his name, in the process of trying to attain those desires, he became purified of all desires. He only wanted the loving service of the Lord. Hari Bhakti Sudodaya describes his prayer to Lord Vishnu, that I approached you for a great kingdom, but I have attained your darshan. Like a man who is seeking broken pieces of glass, but finds the rarest, most precious diamond. I have no desire or inclination for anything of this world. I only want to serve you in unconditional, unmotivated love. The Lord fulfilled his desire, but then told him that responsibility of your family to rule the world. So now you go back and you return to your father, and he will give you the throne and you rule your kingdom. Meanwhile, Uttanapada was just suffering so bitterly, regretting what he had done. Then Narada Muni came, and he was asking Narada, what happened to my little son? What did I do? What an offense. What a cruel-hearted person I am. Why am I so attached to this woman? See, devotees, they become attached. Due to that attachment, they make offenses, and then they simply regret. But in such a situation, we have to take shelter of great souls like Narada Muni. So Narada Muni told him, actually, your son, he will see Lord Vishnu directly, face to face. And then Vishnu will send him back, and you will make him king. So when Dhruva came to the outskirts of the city, Uttanapada decorated the whole kingdom for a glorious reception. And here little Dhruva, five-year-old boy just coming out of the forest, there's a great festival for him. And Uttanapada gladly, after not long, he coronated Dhruva as king. And then Uttanapada went to the forest to perfect his life in devotional service. Dhruva Maharaj ruled the world for a long time. And in under his rule, practically the entire kingdom was Krishna conscious, because he was simply performing his duty for Krishna. He had no attachment except to please Krishna. One time, some yakshas killed his brother Uttama. So Dhruva Maharaj as king understood that I must establish justice. So he went to the kingdom of yakshas and attacked. And they were mystics, very powerful armies. They attacked Dhruva Maharaj. And they sent these mystic illusions where all of a sudden there was massive darkness, and there was lions and tigers and venomous snakes showering like rain upon Dhruva Maharaj. There was all these rakshasa, naked ladies attacking him and screaming. There was massive tidal waves coming from the ocean that were about to just utterly inundate him. There was fireballs falling from the sky. It was a horrible situation. Dhruva Maharaj actually got bewildered by that. Wouldn't you? If all that was coming specifically upon you? So then the sages, they called out, just take shelter of Krishna, chant his name. Because wherever there is Krishna, there can be no darkness. Krishna Surya Samaya Haya Andhakar Yahan Krishna Tahanaya Mare Arikar. Just as where there is the sun, there can be no darkness. Where there is Krishna, there can be no illusion. So he remembered Krishna, and by his remembering Krishna and chanting the name of Krishna, the entire illusion was destroyed. And then Dhruva Maharaj was even more enthusiastic, and he was destroying the entire race of the Yakshas. And they took shelter of Kuvera, who was their worshipable Ishtadev. So Kuvera came down, and he's the treasurer of the demigods, very wealthy, powerful person, very influential. He told Dhruva, you've already done more than enough to purify these Yaksha race. Only a couple of them killed your brother. You don't have to kill all of them. Please let them be. So Dhruva Maharaj said, yes, yes, let them be. So Kuvera was so happy, he offered him any benediction. Now, please ask yourself, if the treasurer of the heavenly planets asked you for any benediction, what would you want? Can you imagine what he can give you? Dhruva Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada explains this in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. He said, the only benediction I desire is to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Lord Krishna, nothing else. Therefore, Prabhupada explains, the ultimate of all benedictions, the ultimate goal to aspire for in life is to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Lord Krishna. Dhruva Maharaj received that benediction and taught the world by his example. Later on, when it was time for his, Lord Krishna was calling him back home, back to Godhead. A divine spiritual airplane from Vaikuntha came down with four-armed residents of the spiritual world driving that plane. And they came and told Dhruva Maharaj that Lord Vishnu was calling you back home, back to Godhead, in your self-same body. And Dhruva Maharaj, as he was about to board the plane, due to his natural grateful heart, he remembered his poor mother. He said, at the beginning of my spiritual life, she helped me. She guided me to Krishna. I cannot go back to Godhead without her. The four-armed residents of Vaikuntha, they told Dhruva Maharaj, the Supreme Personality of Godhead already knew your desire. Look there. He looked in the sky, and Dhruva Maharaj's mother was already on an airplane going back to Vaikuntha. This is Vaishnav, so grateful. His mother, just in a very simple way, helped him. At one point in the beginning years of his Krishna consciousness, and he never forgot that. This is the nature of a devotee's heart. Never forgets any benefits that any devotee has ever given them in their spiritual life. Any assistance. We should never forget that. Without gratitude, our heart is not fit to understand Krishna. So his mother went back to Godhead, and then he went to board the plane, and death personified put his head below Dhruva's foot to be the step to bring Dhruva to the plane to Vaikuntha. Dhruva Maharaj stepped on the head of death, defeated death itself by the mercy of the Lord, and then went home back to Godhead. So Maitreya Rishi is very, very eager to tell this story because it's a story of pure unalloyed devotion. It is a story of total surrender. It is a story of gratefulness. It is a story of how people can be illusioned and how they can get out of illusion. It is the story of the mercy of the great devotees. This is the sum and substance of Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is the great gift Srila Prabhupada has given us. If we follow in the footsteps of Dhruva Maharaj, we will also go back home, back to Godhead. If you try to imitate Dhruva Maharaj, you will die within the first 2 months. First month, taking some fruits every third day, you may survive. But second month, dry leaves and dry grass, There's no juice in dry leaves and dry grass. You just chew it. There's no taste. Every 6 days? By the fifth week of this process, you'll be dead. You cannot imitate Dhruva. But what is the spirit? Following in footsteps means understanding what is the spirit. His spirit was, according to his capacity, he was detaching himself from material enjoyment. And according to his capacity, he was fixing his mind on Krishna. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described in this age of Kali, if you can just follow the four regulative principles, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating, you'll get the same credit as Dhruva Maharaj, eating only grass. Hare Krishna. And if you just chant your rounds attentively and sing in kirtan, worshipping the deity, Mangalarti, then you'll get the same benefits as Dhruva Maharaj, completely fixed 24 hours a day without sleeping, chanting Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, with his mind not wavering for even a moment from the form of the Lord in his heart. By Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, the same result can be achieved. Because the essence of this understanding is Dhruva Maharaj surrendered to the will of his Guru Maharaj. Therefore, Krishna was pleased. Similarly, if we surrender to the will of Srila Prabhupada and follow his process, Krishna will be pleased. And we too will have the opportunity to step on the head of death and ask Krishna, all those devotees, all those persons who helped us in our spiritual life, let them go first. When we have that sweet mood of humble devotion, Krishna will take